Is everybody in? Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
Hey, are we live yet? Are we live yet? Testing. 1, 2, 3. Welcome to Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's online podcast with your host, Jan Irvin. Here we investigate the religious, the mysterious, the entheogenic, the shamanic, and the Gnostic with the small g. If you haven't heard it someplace else, you'll likely hear it here. So sit back and relax. Take a trip through time and a journey through your mind as we investigate the ancient mysteries. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Gnostic Media's podcast number 1. I'm your host, Jan Irvin. A few announcements before we begin today. This Saturday, October 25, I will be giving a live presentation at the Living Temple in Huntington Beach, California. The address is 7561 Center Avenue, number 40, and that's Huntington Beach, 98647. Seating is limited, and we ask that you RSVP before you arrive. Please call 714-891-5117. Once again, that's 714-891-5117 to make your reservations. I'm also happy to announce that I've completely revamped the hempforfuel.com website, which is now interactive and serves all sorts of alternative energy news and information. Check out www.hempforfuel.com. And a Canadian film that I starred in last year called Hijacking Humanity Part 1 has just been released. Though my work is mostly featured in Part 2, which is yet to be released, probably later this year or early next year, I'm certain that the listenership here will find Part 1 quite good. Check out the Second Chance Foundation at www.secondchancefoundation.net and Divergent Films at www.divergentfilms.com for more information. My new book, The Holy Mushroom, Evidence of Mushrooms in Judeo-Christianity, appears to be on target for release next week. I was told by the printer that the first copy of my book was shipped to me earlier this week, so I should be able to approve that and give the thumbs up for that to go into pre-sales and all of that for Halloween Day. For those interested in more information on the new book, please check out the other podcasts available from GnosticMedia.com. I did a two-part interview with Dr. Martin Ball over the last 2 weeks called Was Jesus a Mushroom? And as well as I just released a radio interview that I did with KUCR Radio about 2 or 3 months ago up on the podcast this last week. So check out GnosticMedia.com and go to the podcast page. And for this episode, I'm going to play a recording that I did back in April of this year, 2008. I went with Richard Andrew Grove of Eighth Estate Media and Paul Verge of Divergent Films to the home of pioneering entheogenic researcher, Professor Carl A.P. Ruck of Boston University. Professor Ruck co-authored Persephone's Quest with Gordon Wasson. He also co-authored Apples of Apollo with Clark Heinrich and Dr. Blaise Staples. He's the author of the book, The Sacred Mushroom of the Goddess, Secrets of Ulysses, and more recently he co-authored The Hidden World, Survival of Pagan Shamanic Themes in Survival of Pagan Shamanic Themes in European Fairy Tales. And Professor Ruck is also the one who invented or coined the term entheogen, so we can all thank him for the use of that word. And in this episode, we'll discuss the entheogenic rites of the Eleusinian Mysteries, John Marco Allegro's research in the Sacred Mushroom and the Cross, and Ruck's up-and-coming new books. So stay tuned.
First of all, the Eleusinian Mystery, the fact that a drug of some kind was involved, that hasn't entered the discussion in classical circles.
Right.
I have colleagues that teach ancient Greek mysteries, and I know I'm not on the reading list even. They're not even mentioned to refute me. It's just amazing.
It's amazing how much people pay for an education. They get an education.
And I got into communication with a guy at UPenn, wrote a book on ancient wine, and he hadn't written the book yet, but we were communicating, and when the book came out, I read it, and he just doesn't believe that the Mayanets could have gotten high like that. It was all made up, and there's no way to understand why they had a feeling ancient wine was so intoxicating. He's an archaeologist, and when King Midas, the one with the legendary gold touch, but actually it was a hereditary name for the kings in Anatolia, ancient Anatolia, and when he was buried, they had a big feast, and since it was a sacred festival, they buried the utensils for the banquet, and in the excavation, they found these utensils, and there's a residue of what they ate. And so he's a modern archaeologist, and he submitted the residue to chemical analysis and found that there's residue of barley and so forth, and decided that they had beer. And to me, it seemed that the purpose of this ritual banquet was that the banqueters at the king's feast would take the final journey with him to the other world and then come back again. And this seems to be something you do when you bury someone. And that probably what they drank was something stronger than beer. And since I had worked on Eleusinian Mystery and Ergot, I contacted him with the idea that we would like to test the residue to see if there was any indication that the barley was ergotized. And he sort of went along with it for a while, and then he got frightened, and he broke off all communication with me. And then it went on to write the book about ancient wine, in which he didn't believe that the Mayanets ever behaved like that. Why would the men ever let the women do something like that? And we came up first with a chemist who would test it, but he was a graduate student, and I don't really understand what's going on, but if you're working with ergot, the government's very suspicious of you. And so I never met him, but he claims that his house was set on fire and they tried to kill him. And then, I don't know who, but then his department locked his, changed the key on his laboratory door and wouldn't let him continue with his research.
That was the one that you were in touch with?
Yeah. And so when I told the guy in UPenn that this is what happened, that's when he got frightened. But then we came up with another chemist with impeccable credentials, a chemist at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California, and sent him his CV, but he just isn't interested. It's just too dangerous.
I guess I'd say my biggest question from it is the reference that's made to the Knights of Malta in relation to Plankero. I mean, is there any more to that than what's said in the DVD, or is it just?
It's not really fully researched yet.
Okay. Do you know if they were just maybe the custodians, or maybe they built the chapel and weren't responsible for the fresco necessarily, or?
I don't think we know.
All right, then we found something we can dig up on.
I mean, someone sent me a, because they read that Hidden World, let me show you this photograph.
That's very.
Take a moment to look at what you're looking at. It's the guy says not only in Plan Corot is the secret revealed. This is a church near Plan Corot in the Périgord Valley, and it's a fresco of Saint Christopher carrying the Christ Child. And you know that the myth. It's actually an ancient myth, goes back to Jason carrying Hera across the river. But St. Christopher carries a child across the river, and as he goes across the river, the child gets heavier and heavier, and then he looks up and he realizes he's carrying the Christ Child. And the Christ Child says, I carry the weight of the world, and now you're carrying me in the weight of the world. And when Christopher puts the Christ Child down on one side of the river, he goes back, and the staff that he used as he walked across the river, he sticks in front of his hut, and he grows into a magical tree. And
yeah,
it's, I mean, the Christ Child has a mushroom hat, which should be the orb of the universe, the weight, but it's not. It's only half an orb. And it's clearly a mushroom.
Yeah, I recently found a fresco that with an angel with three mushrooms in her hand and Jesus with a mushroom in his hand. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know, I've got so many hundreds of mushroom trees, and the hard part is going through and picking the best ones for mm-hmm. the new book and getting the ones that are just inarguable.
Well, since we entered into this agreement with City Lights, we went with them rather than Inner Tradition, because we worked out that they would do a series of books by us. And the next one that we're planning is Mushrooms in Christian Art, or Entheogens in Christian Art.
Yeah, that's something that I've been thinking about doing too. So, and there's obviously a lot of direction to go. Obviously, you did the Tours and the Virgin, except that was called.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to ask you real quick, or I don't know, real quick, but I'd like to bring up again the discussion of the Berserkers. And
okay, what do you want to know?
I want to know what you know, because obviously Wasson said that there's no evidence toward it.
That's because Wasson loved the mushroom. And he couldn't believe that it could cause any harm.
Right.
Although he hadn't really experienced the mushroom until after I had known him, and he never told me about experiencing it. But apparently, Kiwe Dinokwe finally initiated him.
Really?
But,
so remember, he said Imazeki, he didn't think that white people were able to have the experience.
But, I mean, he and his wife had fallen in love with the mushroom lore, and he couldn't believe that it would be involved in anything violent like the Berserkers.
Right.
And I haven't eaten the mushroom myself.
No.
So I only deal with what people report. But apparently, as we quote in the Hidden World, it can produce these fits of increased endurance and strength.
Absolutely.
And then in the Mithras book, we also go into the fact that the drug doesn't have to be involved in preparing you for battle. It could easily be involved in the initiation into a togetherness as brothers in a warriorhood.
Right.
And so, I mean, a drug might well make you less effective in battle. It might make you more ferocious and so on, but perhaps the drug was involved in preparing for the battle and not going onto the battlefield itself. I don't know.
Are you aware of that pharmacologist Lewis that died a couple of years ago? He did the Day of the Zulu,
mm-hmm.
Where he, you know, The problem with his view is that he uses the same shaman that David Icke, the lizard guy, uses. Mubatu or
Credo Mutwa.
And Credo is the one who argues that the Zulu shamans snuffed a an amanita extract for war, but Credo, you know, is not credible. You know, so but Lewis did a whole bunch of research on the amanita, and he showed in this documentary for PBS that they brought in two jiu-jitsu experts of equal ability, and they gave one the amanita and one a placebo, and then they had them fight, and the guy on the amanita won every round.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about your personal experience? Since you have consumed mushroom, have you ever felt like you want to go berserker?
No, you know, and that's the thing is, you know, and I've got another friend who has done amanita at least 150 times, and he completely argues against the violent aspects as well.
It gives you the introspection and the sense of oneness that you don't want to fight something outside yourself.
Possibly.
Do you think if you're already of the mindset that you want to go to war and want to go do these things, that it's just going to...
Well, it's a tool to help you do anything you want.
Yes, well, that goes...
Trips. I mean, how many bad trips, quote-unquote bad trips, have you ever had?
Oh. I've done entheogens 1,000 times, and I would say 100 of them were less favorable.
Right.
But bad trips are the ones that you learn the most about yourself from, and they're the most self-reflective and introspective, so... Therefore, are they really bad trips, or are they just things I refuse to face about myself, you know? So that opens up a... What I wanted to go to one more step, though, is why do you think that Wasson used that position against Allegro if there wasn't really strong enough evidence on his part to really argue against the...
And as I said, Wasson was an amateur. And he was well aware of that. He had only a degree in journalism. And he was competing in a world of professional scholars. And so his procedure was to seek out someone who was recognized as an expert and get that opinion. If you read his writings, he goes from one citation to another of important people. And when he asked about Allegro, he would ask people that he knew, so he knew a Catholic priest and he knew a rabbi, and he asked them and they said it was nonsense, and so that frightened him away from it. I mean, his own work was, you know, questionable enough, and he didn't want to destroy all that. You know that his work on Soma, it was... an Indologist from England, Ruff, who came to visit him after he published Soma. Wasson was living in Danbury, and so he offered Ruff lunch, and when Ruff left, he said, here, and it's his, Ruff's rebuttal of the whole thing. It's absolute nonsense. And so Wasson was devastated, and barely bring himself to read it, but finally he wrote a rebuff to Bruff, which was published, but he never got to find out whether he had influenced Bruff one way or the other, because the guy died in a car accident. I mean, he didn't know all these things professionally, so he relied on experts, and when this professional Indologist refuted him, he was devastated. And the rejection of Allegro was so quick and so complete that anyone who, you know, went along with it would be apt to be caught up in the same storm. In Apples of Apollo, we have a footnote saying that Allegro's works, you know, need to be re-examined, but we have omitted him from the bibliography because alphabetically he would have been first, and anyone looking at it would reject our book.
You know, that's that made Judy very upset. she was a little on the livid side when she saw that. So
well, it, it's time, you know, to re-examine what Allegro did. But his, as a linguist, his ability goes beyond most other people's.
Yeah.
No one knows what to make of it.
Why do you suppose that Wasson never understood Allegro's work as supportive of his own?
I don't think that Wasson probably read Allegro's Sacred Mushroom cover to cover.
Right.
A lot of it has to do with sex, and Wasson was a WASP, and we found some of that, you know, not to his liking.
Right. But what about, you know, the lingam all over Hinduism and everything? How is that, you know, how does he not see, again, the correlation between the two?
Yeah, I know.
There's another point that I was going to bring up, you know, and that was, you know, one thing that Allegro thought initially that, you know, and obviously Allegro, as I showed, didn't base his research on Wasson, he bases most of his research on Ramsbottom. And Allegro thought that, you know, because Wasson, I believe Judy had mentioned that Wasson was looking for a linguist expert that would be able to help him out a lot of the work. So Allegro publishes SMC, and he thinks that Wasson is going to team up with him. And then Wasson instead ends up initiating the attack publicly in the Times Literary Supplement against Allegro. And, you know, without having enough foreknowledge on his part, you know, why do you feel that he initiated the attack on Allegro instead of just letting it slide by and not getting himself caught up in the mix?
Well, you read my essay on Mystery of Rahotep, which has to do with Wasson's relationship with Puharich.
Uh-huh.
And it was the same sort of thing. Wasson was very interested in the ability of the mushroom to stimulate paranormal abilities. And he and his whole family experienced clairvoyance caused by the mushroom.
As I have many times myself.
And yet he was frightened by Puharich and told him that he was going to get into trouble if he published those things openly.
Right, you know, and now we know that Puharich was MK Ultra.
At the end of his life, Wasson, in Persephone's quest, he comes out and says, as a matter of fact, they had experienced clairvoyance, and then in Sacred Mushroom Seeker, Masha, his daughter, then talks more about how they all experienced it.
Right.
You know, this is, do you know Tom Roberts? Have you ever met him?
No.
He's an emeritus from University of Northern Illinois, I think. And for years he taught a course on entheogens. And now he's got a website and information system, email system. And he's very much, and he's written some things recently. He's very much, most recently he wrote, I think it's next to the last, Psychedelic Horizons. But then he's also been very much involved in the use of entheogens and psychotherapy and things like that. But he's convinced that banning research into entheogens is curtailing our human development.
Which is what Webster argues as well. And McKenna.
Yeah.
It's by design.
I think Webster's angle is a little bit more solid and provable than McKenna's was.
Well, he was flashy.
Yeah. Well, you know, and McKenna's really the, you know, other than our famous CIA friend Timothy Leary, he was really the one that popularized the whole field.
Was frightened by all of those people. I mean, he kept his distance from Leary. And he was intrigued by Castaneda at first.
At first, until Little Smoke became false.
Yeah. And the truth is that shamans lie. It's part of what you do.
Yeah.
Paranormal phenomena. apparently it requires that you lie.
Do you think that the fact that Wasson used to work for J.P. Morgan and J.P. Morgan was the Vatican's banker, could that be responsible for Wasson's apparent blind spot? Because he could see Soma in the Indus Valley and he could see mushrooms in Mexico, but he seemed to miss this whole thing behind him.
Yeah, you know, obviously in The Wondrous Mushroom, he looks at, you know, Christianity in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, why doesn't he take this symbolism here and apply it here?
In your book, you say that Wasson was willing to accept the mushroom in Judaism only 1000 B.C.
Right.
And I guess you're talking about Genesis.
Right.
And that's a very early date for Genesis.
Well, yes, 560. Probably. Yeah, which is even, it's 440 years even prior to that.
And Wasson wasn't talking about the Old Testament Genesis. He was talking about the Christian version of it. He was talking about Plan Corot. That's what he was thinking of. Which means that he was willing to believe that. I mean, he didn't know how to prove it, but he really thought the Manichaeans and the Christian heresies were involved in a drug cult.
I feel like a student. Well, since you brought up the Manichaeans, do you know of any history with the ruling elite of the Roman Empire, like the Caesars, doing entheogens beyond Amanita Caesarea? Because obviously that was something...
That's edible, I know. Well, the Mithras book, the subtitle is The Drug Cult That Civilized Europe. Because, I mean, the whole view of history is biased by the idea that Rome brought civilization to Europe, and that Christianity finally civilized Europe. And we know that Christianity destroyed many indigenous religions.
And obviously put Europe under dark ages for thousands of years.
Same sort of thing. And so Europe was well civilized before it was civilized, so that's tongue-in-cheek. But the Roman Empire was administered by bureaucrats who shared a drug experience, Mithraism. And the first, Mithraism is the way the Soma cult, the Soma cult spread and it picked up other religions and became assimilated and so forth. But the main way that it entered Rome was in the cult of Mithras. And the first emperor to be initiated, the Magus from Armenia, came to initiate him personally. And he initiated him in something called a magical dinner. Now, what do you suppose they ate?
I would suppose probably the same thing that St. Walburga was eating for the...
All right, so then I have a follow-up question. With what you just mentioned with Mithraism and Mithra slaying the bull with the Phrygian cap, which is a Roman symbol of emancipated slaves all the way up through the French Revolution, the Oxford is founded on an archaeological Mithraic site that was left there by the Romans, and when they discovered it, that's when they then built Oxford, and which worships the sun on May 1st, the choir to the sun, C.S. Lewis. And so is that a continuation of the secret undercurrent of knowledge among a ruling elite or an education elite that still might emanate today? Rhodes scholars and...
Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah, we're definitely... The timeline of entheogens is definitely moving closer and closer and closer to the present, and I think pulling at the Epistle of the Renegade Bishops, I think, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
That is amazing.
What do you think about that? You didn't really tell me your opinion when I sent that to you.
I want to look at the Greek text, and it's so difficult to get the Greek text.
And there's only four original copies left remaining of it. I think one's in Russia. And
if you ask for that, I don't know what you want to read it for.
Have you asked Goldblatt, Professor Goldblatt, for a copy of that? No?
Mm-hmm.
I tried to email him. And said, I'm working with Allegra's daughter, and that he's got the first piece of textual evidence.
He's totally unaware of what he's gotten.
Oh, yeah.
He's not interested at all.
Well,
Oh, yeah, and obviously he avoids commenting on it. You know, he does a little dance. Oh, there's the holy mushroom Allegra talked about. Let's just
Well, it's exactly like
it.
How, sorry.
Yeah.
It's exactly how Lawson hid the story of his Veleda inside the two volumes of Mushrooms in Russian History, which then wasn't kind of reprinted even in partial summary until Persephone's Quest. Right? That's where he kind of first gave regular people who could afford a $20 book. Those other ones could have.
Well, Selma had been out in paperback long by then. It was published, what, 68 in paperback?
Which it doesn't recount all the experiences that he and Valentina had.
Right. Yeah, going back to Judy Brown Allegro for a minute, this is sort of the first time that any sort of correlation between or assimilation between the Wasson and Allegro camps has really even gotten together and discussed and been able to have a cool, calm conversation about the juxtaposed sides of the field. So, you know, to me, this is sort of a large step forward for the whole entheogen camp if we can all start realizing that we're all working on the same thing and stop fighting against each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, you know, Judy, like, you know, going back to the forward for SMC, she says, well, you know, that would be the only change that I would make to the book, because she feels that you would bring a lot of...
Yeah.
credibility to reanalyzing Lager's work, and obviously now.
Well, I've been over that book so many times. I mean, not only reading it from the beginning to the end, but just looking at things and checking references, and it's just amazing the information that's there.
Yeah.
And it is just too rich for people to understand.
Yeah. So why do you suppose you and I and Jack Harris seem to be the only ones that got it? And Professor Rush out of California too.
Yeah, well, Jose Alfredo in Spain and Mark Hoffman.
Yeah. Just seems like just so few people, and it took so long.
It's because, you know, it's because it has to do with religion. And people are just blind about religion. I mean, so Moses went up on the mountain and came down with the tablets engraved with the hand of God. What did he come down with? You know, did it happen that way?
Yeah.
Was there a stonemason up there? Did God actually write on tablets of stone and Moses take them down? Well, I mean, that's sort of paranormal, isn't it?
Well, and then you
know, that's really... But so if you believe that there is Yahweh, of course he could do that. But if you don't believe it is Yahweh, you think, well, something happened, but it wasn't that, was it?
Right.
It was something else.
Right.
And to take on the Judaic Christian tradition, as Allegro did, I mean, they were going to destroy him.
Yeah.
And look at the problem we're having now, the confrontation between Islam and Christianity and Judaism. One God and three different versions of three different prophets of the same God. And, you know, there is no God. That's
right.
The problem.
Right.
Thomas Jefferson said that I've forgotten, the words are fantastic, but one can look it up. But religion has caused more damage in the world than anything else.
Absolutely. Professor Rush, in his new book, argues...
I mean, I don't believe that the world is materialistic, but, I mean, there is a spiritual dimension, but it doesn't have to do with a god. It may have to do with lots of gods.
Right.
Not this, my god is better than your god, so let's kill each other.
Well, what Professor Rush argues in his new book coming out this summer, False God, is that if you look at the stories, indeed, the three gods were not the same. And he goes in and he looks at, you know, Islam is originally based on a war fertility god, and then Yahweh was a different god, and then the Jesus of the Christians is not the same god as Yahweh, because Yahweh was the evil, jealous god, you know, that kill and do all that, and then... He analyzes it from a point that the Essenes were trying to move away from that whole Talmud law of, you know, strict cultural suppress everybody and create a more open religion that the Gentiles could come into, and, you know, that was for everybody and not just the quote-unquote chosen people. He makes he argues that you know, that there's a distinct separation between the gods, and he points out, which I agree, which Allegro points out as well, and is the feedback that I've gotten personally from Shannon's article, is the main contention against Shannon's article is that he tried to argue that Moses was a real person in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, and how can you argue that a mythological character is consuming real drugs?
I know Benny, I've met him several times, and what he says in that publication, I was at the conference where he originally made the presentation, and he mentions that it was, you know, so many years since that, because it's so hard to get anything published. But I think that he's mistaken in his methodology. He argues that similarity of experience means similarity of chemical cause.
Right.
I don't think that's true at all.
I give Shannon Bain a lot of credit, because he's really the first major psychologist to stand up and say what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't necessarily agree or disagree, or do I have enough information to make a decision on his ayahuasca analogs, but like Saji and these other guys argue at Sajdi, that there does seem to be a possibility there, and certainly, as he talks about in his article, that that Paganum Harmala was growing around the Qumran area, so mm-hmm. It seems to, as he states himself, make for great hypothetical speculation.
Have you met Dan Mercour?
I've not met him. I've emailed with him a couple of times, but that's it. You know, I had him read over in my first book, Astrotheology and Shamanism, you know, because we attack his work on mana and that, you know, mm-hmm. because he forgets in his own book that he says that ergot was a substitute, quote-unquote, for the mana of the wilderness years. And then he goes on to attack Allegro. Well, mm-hmm. if you're going to attack Allegro, you better have an answer for what that substitute was replacing. And, you know, so I had sent him my research on that and had him look over and verify it and sign it off. And it was maybe two or three emails, and that was about it.
If the symbol for the mana is the circle with the
cross,
and that's also a solar symbol, is it possible that the spores maybe come from the sun? No, that's not my
question. That's a McKenna theory.
My question would be, the communion wafers that they still use today have the cross, and since they're giving you a placebo for what obviously used to be something that allowed you to have communication, union with yourself or your creator, however you choose mm-hmm. to see it.
The cross predates Christianity.
Oh, for sure. It's a solar,
it's
solstice and equinox.
It's the intersection of the two ellipses, whatever they're called.
Yeah.
Vesica Pisces?
Yeah.
And then the Vesica Pisces, you know, I don't know if you saw in our book, Astrotheology and Shamanism, but
I haven't seen your book.
Okay, well, we figured out that the Virgin Mary is actually the female yoni. If you look at Lady of Guadalupe
yeah.
like this, it's
yeah.
very
Absolutely.
Clearly
vagina. Jose Alfredo's.
What's that?
Jose Alfredo, our colleague in Spain, Gonzalez Celdoran.
Yeah, yeah.
He's very much into that.
Yeah, you know, I've never tried to contact him. Maybe one of these days I should follow up with him, but...
His English is pretty good.
Is it?
Yeah. Very prolific, too. In addition to working with us, he also writes novels.
Oh, does he, really?
Yeah, one of them was published, actually.
You know, Allegro tried to cross that line,
mm-hmm.
and he wrote two novels that never got published.
Mm-hmm.
And he did do a play that went on stage. But here, I was going to try and find you that. Oh, you know what? This is for you.
And a copy of the book.
Thank you.
Dennis McKenna, ironically, was at the World Psychedelic Forum last week and plugged our
mm-hmm.
DVD. I was kind of shocked to hear him plug it.
Books they haven't read.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem, you know, with this area of research, is people attack it without reading it.
Well, Allegro was the first I knew about this, and that led me to Wasson. But Wasson ended up wanting to work with me in Allegro, and just wasn't interested.
So that's interesting. You got to Wasson through Allegro.
Mm.
Hmm. Oh, look, there's another green man right behind you.
There's
in the window.
In Roslyn Chapel, all over the place,
mm-hmm.
along with the maze and all the other things that you couldn't have found in Europe.
I haven't found a cathedral, I don't think, without a Green Man.
Which must have been something.
Which says a lot in and of itself.
Stoneworkers.
To your collection of Green Man statues and things, really, yeah, that's. I've been thinking about turning my attention toward that for European mm-hmm. Christianity, and either writing an article or, you know, and then articles tend to turn into books. So.
Well, Blaise was a great collector, and so these Staffordshire figures, it's intriguing that they were so popular in England, still are, but it's the cult of the little people.
Have you read Fairy Faith in Celtic Countries?
No.
By Evans Wentz, who is an Oxford professor, famous translator of Egyptology, you know, he's got one of the translations of the Book of the Dead is his and things, mm-hmm. but his doctoral thesis at Oxford was to prove the existence of fairies, and so he wrote a book called Fairy Faith in Celtic Countries and proved that fairies existed and earned his doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what about the lightning strikes and the fairy rings that grow up, the rings of mushrooms? Because I've got videos of people who, you know, who go out and show you these rings.
Right. Well, he didn't take it into the world of, you know, the hidden world, but his focus was to prove it from an anthropological perspective. That
prove fairies, but don't go into the hidden world to do it.
You know, it's like, what's the story of Rumpelstiltskin or one of those stories?
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the guy who falls asleep under the tree and wakes up and he's mm-hmm. in the fairy world. And they obviously, you know, and I've found many paintings of that story with amanitas lying all around him when he's asleep. And it's not Rumpelstiltskin, it's a...
Rip Van Winkle.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That may be a made-up myth, but it's obviously made up from authentic traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And probably reinforced by traditions that the Dutch brought to New York.
That's from this area then, that mm-hmm. story.
What about Reverend Charles Lutwidge Dodson, Lewis Carroll?
Mm.
The not only the iconography, but the, you know, well, the pictures in the mind that he embeds in a children's story that has a long permutation through mm-hmm. time. And, you know, some people say, well, that's a coincidence. But there's too many things in there. If you've had the experience that match up, and almost lets you know that, you know, in the late 1800s, this was known among certain circles of intellectuals, and especially maybe in the church, because he was a reverend.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about that all?
I think that the mystery was kept alive in secret circles, and Alice in Wonderland is a takeoff on the Alice in the Mystery.
Right.
And it was written for Liddell, who was a great classicist. And I think he recognized it as that. And but they don't want anyone to know about it.
Hmm. Something else I was going to bring up. I should have written a note down a minute ago.
Well, the fact that they don't want people to know about it leads into the prohibition of certain entheogens. Thank you for the word, by the way. Mm. It's a very useful expression. It's a lot better than hallucinogen or psychedelics.
Yeah,
you won't get that, but when you're like, look, it generates God within, and that's what the Eucharist and the, you know, when you're trying to explain to people that piece of nomenclature.
Yeah, him and Jeremy Bigwood and all the other guys probably had a round table about this very subject about 30 years ago.
I'm just saying it's a product that works. It's very useful today.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, my two favorite words are either psychoactive or entheogen. Psychoactive is a mild, you know, psychedelic, leery, ruined. Even though it's still a valid term, mind manifesting. Even though isn't it a bastardized word between Latin and Greek?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even a real word, psychedelic. Mm-hmm.
No, psychedelic is all Greek.
Oh, it is all Greek.
Psychoactive is bastardized.
Yeah. Greek and English.
The problem with psychedelic, other than the fact that it has connotations of drug 60s.
Yeah.
is that it should be psychedelic, not psychedelic.
Ah, okay, that's what it was. I did remember reading that in somebody, maybe your book or...
Yeah. So you have hopes that this will eventually, you know, shake the world and people will...
Well, you know, Professor Rush has big plans for this summer. Mm-hmm. He is trying to blow the rooftop off of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got images that he's been guarding for 8 years that very clearly depict Jesus in a patch of mushrooms holding a big red Amanita cap. And he's got from one of the major cathedrals in Europe, and he's got all of these images laid out, and he's got the description of the whole storyline laid mm-hmm. out, and it's, you go through all this and it's just, it's done. And then, you know, right after that he cites my text, the Epistle to the Renegade Bishops, and he says, you know, the second he got back from his trip to Europe and pulled his images up on the computer, he said he knew instantly that Allegro was totally mm-hmm. right. You know, and there was some area of this cathedral that they had cordoned off where they didn't let the tourists through, and he standing over there doing this number and trying to get a peek with his camera and stuff, and this nice old lady comes up to him and, "Would you like to see?" and lets him through the rope, and mm-hmm. you know, so he ended up with this whole area of this cathedral that hadn't even been photographed before, or very little. So he's ready to blow it sky high, and he wants to time the Jack Harris book, my book, his book, and then hopefully the republishing of SMC altogether. And, you know, hopefully with the impact of three or four books hitting the market simultaneously on that topic, and then him focusing on the academic aspect, and he's trying to get his book sent out to all of the anthropologists in his field through his publishing company. You know, I guess he's got some plan that they're going to target the professors to market his book to and everything. And he had me peer review or peer edit the book for him and just make sure that from my perspective of research that there weren't too many errors. And
I have the feeling that no matter what we do, it just gets ignored.
You think so?
Mm.
Well, you know, I've seen... my video downloaded and watched about 600,000 times, and I get emails from Hong Kong, and I've gotten several emails from Muslims and, you know, people all over the world that have watched the video and just went, "Wow, you've completely changed everything I thought about religion." And then I guess there's the old hope that the Age of Aquarius of the new age of the precession of the equinoxes is going to be true. The waters of knowledge will pour back to the mm-hmm. the people, you know. And we do seem to be evolving, and it also seems to me that if humans keep on this current pace, we're going to run ourselves like lemmings off of the cliff. And we need to learn to evolve out of this constant stage of competitive, aggressive behavior if we're going to figure anything out. And it seems that even though, and, you know, looking at like Webster's work, you know, in Theogem seem to have brought us to a stage of violence, and seems to be able also the key that can remove us or take us out of this stage or age of violent.
I think it's the removal of entheogens from society to allow people's egos to artificially grow, and then lying protects the egos, and that's where you get more of the justification for all the profitability and everything that follows beyond that.
Yes and no, you know, but then you go back to like Professor Whitehead's work and the dark shamanism stuff. Are you familiar with Whitehead?
Yeah.
He's written some, I think I might have one of his books in here. He's written some phenomenal books on
dark shamanism.
Yeah, this is one of his books here. And he really goes after like the rosy paintings that, you know, like Metzner paints of...
I need glasses to
sure. me. I love his work. It's phenomenal. He was a victim of a dark shaman attack in South America. And then he went, set forth to debunk all of the debunkings of against mm-hmm. the Kanema.
Looks very interesting.
Have you ever seen Maria Sabina perform the mushroom ceremony?
No.
Have you?
I think I've seen a video clip of her.
Yeah, because I think I sent you the video.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
It's really interesting. I don't speak Spanish, but basically when she goes through it, she explains that Jesus is the mushroom.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like a year before I had ever known about Jan or your work, or that anyone wrote books on this stuff, I was doing my experiments in New York City, and at one point I had this epiphany that the mushroom told me what I couldn't reconcile because I was raised Presbyterian.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was taking all these notes for months, going through trips several times a week, and basically when the mushroom had told me that and I wrote it down, as soon as I wrote it down, I ripped it up because of the denial that's seated in any type of Christianity. You know, if I was Catholic, I probably would have committed suicide.
Just for thinking.
Right? I'm like, oh, what horrible thoughts. But, you know, it was only through that traumatic experience and that bad trip, which was my best trip, that I went out and kept looking and looking for information. And then you find that not only have you written books on this, but that you had a mentor and he had a mentor, and that there was, you know, a lot of evidence going back for a long time. So it helped me not feel so crazy in the middle of a world where all this information is just denied. Like, they act like it's not there.
Yeah.
You know? And I said to my parents, I said, how could you guys have lived your whole lives and not know anything about this? And yet everyone's just so docile and willing to...
And as soon as you put it on your radar, it's everywhere. You see it in all of the, you know, artwork and the fairy tale stories and Christmas and...
And then you realize, as I did, that when you're in those states of mind, especially at different levels and experimenting in different sets and settings, that it does accentuate your senses, and you're getting all sorts of metadata that you don't even know how to process yet, and that your instinct is actually a very useful, you know, system that's been basically covered and cluttered up with our culture. We're taught to deny it because it's not logical, but so.
Plus the whole element of religion is to take everything on faith, right?
Right, don't ask,
So you get mad at you using just...
Someone above you in a food chain knows the answer to that, but I'm not going to tell you.
I have faith I don't question. I had this kid last week tell me that. You know, I got into a discussion with him about religion. He says, I have faith I don't question. You don't get the Bible. That's what he told me. And I said, well, I've actually done a lot more research in the Bible than you have, you know, and, you know, what other than the Bible have you studied about the Bible? No, nothing, just the Bible.
Belief is a thought process which has been extinguished. Says, I know this, I no longer need to check into this anymore.
You have to live your life according to the Bible. So King Solomon had 700 wives, so I guess
absolutely.
You should have 700 wives.
God's name is jealousy, it says.
And
right,
they select what they want.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the thing. I mean, I guess as a Christian, I was so interested in Christ and what, you know, I believed. And so I was so interested, I ended up looking beyond where they had limitations, and then you find a whole, you know, a hidden world.
Yeah.
Right? And so... Yeah, I do think that, you know, with the internet and the different forms of multimedia today, and the fact that America's most popular show is America's, you know, what is it? American Idol, right?
Yeah.
American Idol. I mean, I think people are just crying out for some real content that has some meaning and something that they can chew on, you know, food for thought, because we live in a society of basically, junk media. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all... One-time use and throw it away. There's nothing, or not much.
Junk food for the brain.
So what's your next project?
Well, we have to get Mithra's book out, which means worrying about permissions for illustrations, and we're working with the editor. There may be some changes. But the next book that we're working on is Entheogens in Christianity.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot there.
We have a big manuscript, which you read, Fungus, Red Deepibus,
yeah.
And Mystery of Rohotep. Those were the first two chapters of a book on mushrooms in Egypt. And so we still have that whole manuscript, which is quite good, but it has to be cut down into smaller pieces.
Do you feel that that a word in... Egyptian has been discovered for the mushroom yet?
If there isn't one, it's even more significant.
Professor Rush argues that it's the Ankh.
Mm-hmm.
Sanctuary, that's where you go.
But I don't think he's the first one to argue that either.
Mm-hmm.
I think didn't Allegro argue that, and quite a few others too. I think you argue that in Sacred Mushrooms.
I think George Clayton Johnson symbolically represents that in Logan's Run.
I think people are still more open to any drug other than a mushroom. I mean, there is such a phobia about mushrooms. Could a Roman emperor actually have eaten a psychoactive mushroom?
To me, without a doubt.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, grass, okay, but... a lot of people are keeping secrets. What do you suppose the guys in Al-Qaeda do up there in the mountains?
Well, they showed it in Batman Begins. They use, you know, it's the same as the Hashishin. Well, there's a mythology with that. But, yeah, I mean, you're right to some degree. You're definitely right. Although Al-Qaeda is not exactly what it's advertised to be.
How do your students react to your research?
Keep a low profile. Universities are very competitive for enrollments, and it's not going to help the BU enrollments if the parents who are so worried about their children think they're going to send their beloved bundle of genes to be corrupted by someone like me. And so, but I talk about these things openly, and I have a few people who do directed studies with me and get more involved in the subject. But the others, nothing surprises them.
History Channel, on April 19th. Has a major video coming out on the history of psychedelic drugs and its correlation with religion.
Mm. I think it's the 20th. But
maybe for the East Coast, I'm on the, my email for the West Coast said the 19th.
Or 20.
But I don't know if you saw this documentary recently on Showtime, American Drug War.
No.
It's it was done by Kevin Booth. And I was in it, and it got on Showtime, and then Kevin wrote me a couple weeks ago, and he was saying, dude, I got to tell you that the most popular part of the entire film is your part talking about the entheogens. Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that Allegro's work, I found professors all over the place who were starting to stand up for Allegro. There's Professor Whitehead at University of Wisconsin is pro-Allegro. And it just seems like it's slow, and they say there's three stages of any idea being accepted, where it's fought against, where it's, sort of marginalized, and then where it's completely accepted as it's always been fact. And I think right now we're in the second transition phase. I think we're over the extreme heavy denial. I think so many people are beginning to wake up to the idea, at least I hope so. Maybe that's just my positive...
But the Good Friday experiment was conducted at Marsh Chapel,
right,
the campus of Boston University, and it was before I was there. But one of my colleagues, my colleagues do know what I'm doing, they just don't talk about it. But one of them said, it's the 50th, last Easter was the 50th anniversary, and we should do something about it. And I said, well, we could have a conference. So he said, I'll talk to the people in religion. And nothing came of it. They don't want any involvement with that.
That's on my iPod.
But religion for many people is not a matter of spirituality. It's a matter of bureaucratic administration and social welfare and good deeds and things of that kind. I know the Metropolitan of the Orthodox Greek Church, and he knows what I do, but we never talk about anything like that. He's an administrator,
right? And when you're growing up and you have a spiritual need that every human has, and that involves a lot of focus and input on your part, activity, searching, mm-hmm. and people don't want to put that effort forward. So religion steps in and says, we have it all right here in a prepackaged for you, and all you have to do is give 10 points every week. Right?
And don't think.
Yeah, and don't think about it. Don't ask. Don't look in the box. It's in there. Whatever you want, whatever you came for, it's in the box.
Can't look at it.
What is it you think makes some people realize there's something beyond that? And for instance, feel that there's no creator. And some people think that there has to be, nothing could be done unless there was a creator.
I don't know how to answer that. I mean, I think people want to do religion the same way they go to the supermarket.
That's
a great analogy.
And some people, you know, see other worlds.
Right.
And communicate with spirits.
So now, you said that you've never taken mushrooms yourself.
I've done psilocybin.
Oh, okay. You haven't done Amanita specifically. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Was it the psilocybin that led you to Allegro, or?
No. I think the first drug I had was peyote.
Okay.
And then LSD.
What was your first psilocybin trip like?
It was beautiful.
When would you say you had your first full blown where you went, oh, I got it?
Probably the first time.
Really?
LSD. Didn't do it very many times, but I mean, it's illegal, hard to find. But once we had some LSD and took it, and it was a really terrifying experience. We thought we were going to die, and we didn't. And, so we still had another dose the next day. So we took the second dose, and nothing happened. And now I know it's because your body builds up an immunity immediately. And so it is absolutely a non-addictive drug.
Absolutely. Have you done ayahuasca yet?
No.
Ayahuasca is very interesting because you can do the exact same recipe from the exact same plants and come up with, you know, one time it'll let you in and you'll have a full-blown.
Yeah.
The next time you won't even feel it.
A lot of the plants are like that. The mushrooms are like that, too.
You know,
take it several days in a row and they'll play with you the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And then some other time they won't let you in. And if you keep knocking, though, I found that they'll let you in. And that's
You know, like the
you want in, you're in.
The Johns Hopkins University study says psilocybin has the ability to occasion the spiritual experience. It doesn't say it causes. It says, you know, it can occasion the experience.
Because out of a couple hundred times, you had that one experience. That experience for a Westerner who had no idea what was happening, I did think I was dying. And when it was still continuing 24 hours later, I had to go to the hospital. And luckily, I had a doctor, a young guy from India, who kind of knew what was going on. And he's like, no, my friend, you're fine.
Has Judy Brown done drugs?
She's pretty straight and narrow like her father. You know, I think she might have actually tried alcohol, which I think John was even against doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really unfortunate that John, the weary dotard's wandering our college campuses on cannabis, and you know, that was his whole view of drugs in general. And then when he read Puhurich and all the Berserker Rage stuff, he just took that and never wanted to try it and just worked from that angle, unfortunately.
But do you think that has something to do with the predisposition of the information in society? Because if I gave you a glass of water and said this is going to make you sick, you'd probably get sick. If I said this is going to cure you, and you believe that, it'll probably cure you.
It could. Yeah, and there's just so much, the research, like Jonathan Ott points out in Pharmacotheon, the research in that time was so convoluted on the chemical composition of Amanita muscaria and everything. Wasson hits Allegro for getting the chemistry wrong in his book, but you have, for that whole 5-year period there, every other week, everybody, including Schultes, was contradicting Wasson. Wasson is contradicting Puhurich. They're all, everybody's contradicting each other. And when you look at it, there's just no way, with Allegro not being a chemist, that he could have figured it out on his own. There's just, when I went back through and looked at all of the citations and everything that he went through, I was just like, You know, there is no way that Allegro could have come to the proper conclusion.
No, I know. We obviously have to use a chemist.
Yeah.
And whatever was published.
Yeah, and Allegro was always very good at going to other scholars, you know, and why he didn't for the chemical composition. You know, he accepted Puharich, and because Wassenaar written it, you know, and Schultes and these guys had all made either alluded to or made vague statements about the chemical composition. You know, Puharich was standing there, well, I have the answer, it's this, and you know, and I'm a doctor, and that's that. And so Allegro grabbed it and said, okay. Are you familiar with Jack Harris' work at all?
No.
He's the author of The Emperor Wears No Clothes, Hemp and the Marijuana Conspiracy. He's the one that... He's the one that brought back all of the information on industrial hemp and everything. He's considered a global folk hero. You know, he's brought back industrial hemp to 50 countries. Mm-hmm. So when I look at the work that he's done, and he was completely shunned in the beginning, and now his work is just almost completely globally accepted. Mm-hmm. He's got a $100,000 challenge to contest his work and everything. And then I look at his work and how far he's gone, and I think that, you know, we can do the same. And I think with him, you know, he's sold almost 1 million copies of his book. And when he puts his name on that new book, I think it's going to stir some things, because everybody knows who Jack Harer is. He seems to think it's ready to go to print now. I'm still trying to get a new copy of the manuscript out of him so that I can peer edit it before he goes to print. But his focus is going to be a word-by-word breakdown of Jonah, Song of Solomon, and Revelation, word-by-word, using major published translations to show that, you know, his argument is that the Song of Solomon is actually a field mycology guide, and that broken down, it's very exact, and using it for hunting mushrooms.
Amazing. Heinrich, of course, thinks it's a eulogy of the mushroom.
Yeah. That's where he and Heinrich differ, and he's well aware of Heinrich's.
I've seen your website and the cover of the book, but I haven't read your book.
Yeah. Well, what I do is I focus on the archaeoastronomy, astrotheology aspects. I noticed that zodiac on your gate coming through there. I was like, oh, this is Ruck's house. You know, but what I did was, you know, obviously you can't get around the archaeoastronomy and astrotheology aspects. The stars, the sun, the moon were definitely anthropomorphized. You know, so my goal in writing that was I saw two fields that were very distinct and separate that shouldn't be. And I started looking at the aspects of the macro-microcosm and as above, so below. And then one day it just hit me, this is a law. This was a permanent part of the philosophy back then. Whatever was above, so below. And then when I started going back through and looking at astrotheology and shamanism and what I'd written up to that point, it was just clear. And I could see, you know, the sun above, the mushroom below, all of these correlations, the body is, you know, all the signs of the zodiac or parts of the body and everything, and then all of these things started clicking together. I try to establish astrotheology and entheogens as the two primary pieces of religion along with fertility, but obviously fertility, there was such a vast amount of research there that we couldn't cover it in ANS, so that's one of my next books is I'm trying to pen down all of, I'm doing a review of all of the fertility research in Judeo-Christianity from 1786 forward, because that's when the major doctors and professors really started focusing on religious genesis via fertility. Then Allegro took the brunt of the attacks on that, which was absurd because there were two centuries of heavy scholarly research in that field, and Allegro, you know, it's like none of the other research there existed. Allegro took the full brunt of the attack for that. It was by no means his idea.
Do you know David Ulansey's work on Mithras?
That name sounds familiar.
He's in California, San Diego, I think.
Okay.
And his book is about the precession of the equinoxes.
Yeah, that's what I go into heavily.
And that Mithraism is a religion that reflects
that. That's what we discuss in our book, too. Yeah, in fact, when you watch that DVD, we go into the, we break down the pre-session and...
The amazing thing about his work is he even shows up at conferences on entheogens, but he doesn't ever mention drugs in his work. And Mark met him at a conference. He is the teacher at Boston University and was a guest out here a couple of times for dinner. He's a really nice guy, and see, he was very impressed with the work on Eleusinian Mystery, so he knows about all that. But apparently he knows that he mustn't ever write about it because it'll ruin his career. He's very successful.
I know a couple of researchers that act the same, that I know full well, that I've sat in conferences with them for 4 hours on entheogens, and then all of their work is completely void of any commentary on it whatsoever.
Do you think they do that just to protect their career, or is there, you know, unspoken
law? He has
law,
very good academic position. He's not going to jeopardize that.
But if it wasn't for people like you chancing your academic position and, you know, putting this information out there, we wouldn't feel comfortable even talking about it, let alone doing work and making films and proliferating our experiences with backed up, you know, references.
When do you think that your book on entheogens and Christianity would be ready?
Well, we've got ideas for writing it, and it probably takes about a year because we recycle things that we've done before.
Right.
But we have to get the Mithras book out first, although we can work on both at the same time. And so Mithras is coming out early 2009.
If we could target somehow to, you know, every couple of months to every 3 months, one of these books hits on Judeo-Christianity, I think, you know, because for the last 37 years, there's been one book with Clark Heinrich talking about it a little bit, and that's really it, you know. So, you know, I think once a flood of information comes
out. Would you
up,
be interested in City Lights Press for the republication of the Allegro?
I'll have to talk to Judy about that, but I would definitely...
Because I mean, they have various... It's a very... radical press tradition, but they're developing a segment of their catalog which will deal with entheogens.
I think Professor Rush is planning on publishing with them. What were you going to say?
Oh, and they did redo the Wondrous Mushroom.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I guess Mark did mention to me the Entheogens and Christianity book, and I think you mentioned to me the Mithra book too.
And then there's the Egyptian book.
Are you doing that too?
It's all done. It's just that it has to be broken down into smaller pieces. And we were working with an Egyptologist who I never met, and he's only published a few things on the web, and some of the things I thought were a little far out, but anyway, we were working on this book, and he was very enthusiastic. I did all the work, actually, and Jose Alfredo. Mark got into the project only at the end, so it was really this Egyptologist and Jose Alfredo and me. I think the best part of the book is on the Eye of Ra. You have a disembodied eye that symbolizes vision. You have an Egyptian culture where, clearly documented, they know about entheogens. For example, the style of attire for upper class Egyptians was to have a wax comb hump on their head, we can document that this wax thing was a way of administering a drug. We can see the slave girls squeezing mandrakes onto the wax comb, and so that they're being infused with mandrake.
It's like the tonsure.
Yeah. So we know that they were into drugs and so on, but did they know about the mushroom? And they did. But so the prime emblem is this embodied eye. You can even document where you collect the tears from the eye and drink them. And the tears from the eye is shown in
disembodied eyes.
Yeah, and the tears are the entheogenic essence of the entheogen. So the part that Jose Ofeda was particularly interested in was a ritual in which you imported the eye, which was gathered on the mountains of Nubia, through the import city of Heliopolis, and Elephantini, to the sanctuary at Heliopolis, and it was mixed in a beer, turned the beer red, and it was drunk for ritual intoxication, and so we pretty much shown that what was being imported for this ritual beer was a plant that was gathered on the mountains in the south, and so we got to that part, and the Egyptologist saw it, and he said, "No, it's not that." No, this guy is weird, because he's the one who got me interested in re-examining Puharic and Rahotep, and he also was playing around with flying saucers and things like that. And I think he was going to tell me something by himself, but he broke off communication because this simply wasn't the answer, because he knew the answer. I don't know, he knew the answer from some other source. I'd asked him, one of his essays that was on the web had fallen off the web, and I said, "Could you send it to me?" And then he broke off. Then a couple of weeks later, he wrote back and said, "Maybe I was too hasty. I hope you didn't take offense." I said, "No offense taken. Just send me your essay." And then he never answered again. And so this Egypt book really requires an Egyptologist, and we lost our Egyptologist.
So why don't we just find a new one?
He wasn't. Yeah, we have someone in England who we may draft for the project, but that's where that project ended up. And it's just weird because we never had an argument or anything like that. It's just that he just knew the answer from some other source, and we had come up with the wrong answer. As to what he thought.
As to what he concluded through his opinion. Yeah, anyway.
As to what he thought this ingredient for the red beer, it's henna.
Henna?
Yeah.
The tattoos.
It's a red dye.
And he thinks that that's it? That no, yeah. Psychoactive?
No, even though the beer is especially intoxicating.
Strong beer, yeah. Even though we give alcohol to apes and it doesn't affect them 100 times more than us.
Found a description of this ritual ceremony in Herodotus, in his journeys in Egypt. And so it's a really very interesting and well documented.
Let me throw this out to you. Have you looked at the ancient Islamic maps and texts? One thing that I noticed recently going through ancient Islamic texts was their symbol for a mountain is a mushroom. How they draw it on the maps.
Yeah.
You know, they draw a mushroom for the symbol of a mountain. I just showed him that last night.
It's easy to find them that way.
Well, the part of the book that he went along with, which was really my doing, but he directed me to various things to read, and there are often, a pharaoh often built more than one pyramid, and obviously he couldn't be buried in all of them, and it turns out at every jubilee ceremony he was re-inaugurated as pharaoh. The pharaoh is really just a priest king, a shaman, and so you'd have to build a new pyramid for each initiation. And we went into the structure of the pyramid and the ritual of interment and so forth, and the pyramid texts and things of that kind, and came up with the idea that the inauguration of the pharaoh involves an initiation into an out-of-body experience to the world and back again, and that the new pharaoh at his inauguration journeyed with the dead pharaoh for the final trip, and that at each jubilee he would do it over again. So that's why it's, so actually the pyramids are structured as a shamanic pathway to the new world and back again, and he went along with that. The part that was mostly his, he noticed the crowns of the pharaohs, which are very interesting, and what you wear in your head is significant about what empowers you. And so there is that crown that's in the shape of a bowling pin,
mm-hmm.
and a very strange thing. And to him, it looked like a psilocybe mushroom, and it could be. And so the chapter has to do with the deads of Osiris, which is a strange bed of straw and things in which he grew things. And he believed that they were growing psilocybe mushrooms on them.
Right.
Which is possible. But I mean, I think that was more far-fetched than the importation of the ingredient.
Well, have you...
There's that part, which really is his, but I never was terribly convinced with that part. When we got onto the new material, it was too much for him.
Have you? I obviously haven't seen it. You have read it. In my book, when I went through and started looking at Merker's research and the substitutes with ergot and things like that, and looking at his research, I started looking at the word wilderness. And if you look in like Strong's Exhaustive Concordance, the word wilderness is midbar, Hebrew midbar, mm-hmm. which is a cow pasture. And so the manna of the wilderness years was manna from a cow pasture. So I think that lends heavy support to the, mm-hmm. you know, the well, obviously the Exodus is a mythological tale to begin with, mm-hmm. but, you know, it would lean, to, in my opinion, credence to the psilocybe argument. Have you seen the work of Epiphanius? What book? I've got some quotes for the second edition of my first book from Epiphanius, where he talks about, and which was edited out of the Dindorf translations in the original Greek, which would be perfect for you. I don't know why I didn't think of sending that to you for translation. they talk about the Jesus being born on December 25th, which is the same as Horus and all the sun gods, mm-hmm. and everything. And you know, in the 14th century, the Catholic Church found Epiphanius' text, and then they rewrote it, and then it stayed. That was the official version from 1400 until the 1870s, when they found a 10th century manuscript that superseded that one, and then they were able to reconstruct all the original statements. And what the Catholic Church edited out was Epiphanius arguing that Jesus had to have been real because his birth date is the same as all the ancient other myth gods. So it's a really backward, yeah. sort of twisted logic yeah. that he uses in the argument. Yeah. You know, somebody says, well, Epiphanius, he was a highly respected church father and everything, they would never edit his work, but yet here's four paragraphs. When you look at both manuscripts, there's four paragraphs of the stuff missing right out of it. And it specifically talks about the rituals of Alexandria. It mentions the Ulysses mysteries, mm-hmm. and some other stuff. And I actually stumbled on it from one of Christian Ratch's books, and it was just a vague quote. Professor Rush, the one I mentioned earlier, he's done a book arguing that Osiris was the Amanita muscaria, and as well as the sun. And, you know, so anyway, going through all of that stuff, and it was just sort of all matched up, and it was, you know, kind of interesting.
But the Christian Church didn't decide on a date for Christ until think the 4th century.
And they, what was it, 350?
It was voted on and ratified, that's for sure.
Yeah. They, for, there were some people who felt that as a god, he shouldn't have a birthday because it would make him too much like a pagan god.
Have you read Maya Cosmogenesis from John Major Jenkins?
Yeah.
He does a very interesting breakdown in his book. He argues, you know, like you're talking about doing the Egyptian mysteries and going through the process of the ritual through the Egyptian pyramids and everything. He did exactly that with the Maya pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
And using some of Terence McKenna's ideas and a lot of his own research, a lot of Wasson's research and things like that. You know, he's an independent, you know, like me, an independent researcher. He's gotten a lot of recognition for his work on Maya studies, but his breakdown of the initiation into the Maya cults is an amazing read. I loved his book. It's Maya Cosmogenesis 2012.